It's time for the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle. Stay tuned as we discuss local and national sports from Southeast Missouri and beyond. The Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle is brought to you by Royal Retros. If you like cool throwback jerseys of defunct sports teams, Royal Retros is the place to buy. If you go to royalretros.com and you order with the code SPORTSDESK, all one word, you can get a little bit off your order. So check out Royal Retros. And now on with the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle. And welcome back to the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle. I'm Mike Bueller.
I'm Mark Sanders.
Still in first, Kyle Roberts.
And we have got a very full show today. We have got football, and more football. Plus, we are going to recap the World Series and recap opening weekend for the Raiders and Lady Raiders basketball teams. But first off, we are going to recap district football from last weekend and talk especially about the three teams closest to where we're at in Poplar Bluff, the Poplar Bluff Mules, the Donovan Dons, and the Malden Green Wave. All three of those teams lost. Leading off, I caught some of the Donovan Dons game. They played a district game at Potosi. The Dons offense exploded for 31 points, but could not stop a very talented Potosi team and ended up losing 63-31.
Well, you know, it was all in all, I would classify this as a successful season in that they won four games, returning to varsity, and also the fact that they have a very young team, and you can expect most of their starting lineup next season to be juniors and sophomores, as a majority of the team this time around were sophomores and freshmen. And you also have to hope that Nathan Hampton will be able to get some more bodies out there on the field, even if they're just freshmen. You know, if they're because at this point you're just building a program. You know, you just want to show that you're making progress, and that progress may be that you lose games by a lower margin than you did last time, or that you are still within one score of a tie or a lead in the fourth quarter. I mean, when you're building a program, you know, from a complete restart the way Donovan has the past few years, in fact, really kind of a restart and then a reboot, because they restarted the program, it wasn't successful, and then they slipped back into JV last season, and then they've just come back to varsity this season. So I like the direction that the program is going in. That's an unfortunate district loss to Potosi, but I mean, let's be honest, Potosi is a really good team. Taking a look at their record, they're currently sitting at 6-4 as they go into their next round against Park Hills Central this weekend.
Yeah, and when the two teams played earlier in the season, Park Hill Central won that game 31-28. That stands out because Park Hill Central is also the only team to beat Dexter. So I would say Potosi may be a dark horse to win that district.
Well, whoever it is, they're going to have to get past Dexter. I mean, Dexter is the number one seed, and so they're going to have home field advantage.
Yes.
Assuming that they get past Scott City, which I think should be a reasonable task for them to carry out. They're going to get the winner of Park Hills and Potosi. And I actually think Potosi would have a better chance of winning, because Dexter's already seen what Central has to offer, and they're going to be much more ready for that game on their home field than they were up at Park Hills.
And much more motivated.
Oh, absolutely.
A couple quick thoughts before we move on to talk about Poplar Bluff from last week. Kudos to Donovan's program. Their four wins this year is as many wins as the program had at the varsity level between 2018 and 2023. That's a quantum leap forward, in my opinion. Got some really nice wins. I think this is great for the program. I want to laud Jacob Putman, who had a huge final high school game. He caught two long touchdown passes in that game, scored a third touchdown on an end-around, and had two really big kickoff returns. And those both set up touchdowns, one of his touchdowns, and also set up another touchdown run, I believe, by Madden Wooldridge. So, I mean, he had a huge, huge night for them. I would love to see him get the chance to play football at the college level. Hopefully he will get to. You know, we're hoping soon to have, you know, Coach Hampton and Adam Epps, the Donovan AD and girls basketball coach here on the sports desk. You know, very excited about that. Hopefully we can get that worked out. Popper Bluff Mules last Friday night went up to Fox, lost 49-14 to the host Warriors. I kind of knew as soon as I saw that Fox had beaten Ladue, which is a really good, you know, St. Louis County team in their regular season finale, I thought Popper Bluff's going to have a hard time with these guys, and it ended up being pretty well what I figured might happen.
Bluff's either going to have to develop a quarterback or come up with a better run scheme to play. They're also going to have to get better on defense, and that starts the line with penetration, getting to the quarterback, stopping the run. You also have to develop those linebackers, because that's something that you see far too often in high school football, is once the running back gets through that first level of the defensive line, the linebackers have a hard time tackling. And, you know, when you're playing the really good teams, they have big, fast, strong running backs. And if you can't tackle them at the line, they're just going to run the ball down your throat all day long. So, yeah, I would say developing a quarterback, improving their own running game, because that's going to keep their defense off the field, and then just improving that defense. Those are the three biggest areas of need as I see it for the Mules.
And one good thing that I think did happen this year is I think Gage Earnhardt emerged as their starting quarterback. I think he's got a good chance to develop going forward, but we will know more in the, you know, next season. You know, kind of going around the horn with some of our other scores, Malden lost 61-0 to Portageville. I'm wondering what the future of Malden football is going to be honest.
Well, I've said this on more than one occasion. They need to be playing eight-man football. They just don't have enough players on the team to field enough players. It's just that simple. So, I have nothing to do with that program, so they can choose to completely ignore me as far as that is concerned. But we'll just have to wait and see.
Going around the horn, in other district games, Sykeston lost to Hillsborough in their season. Cape Central dominated Melville to win their district opener. Let me see here. I'm trying to think of some more. St. Vincent beat Kelly. New Matter County Central went to Festus and beat Jefferson. Kennett lost to Scott City. Chaffee in a very hard-fought game. It was 35-34 Scott City. That was arguably the best high school area playoff game of the week. And that's going to lead us into our matchups for this week. Let me pull up my schedule and my predictions. Leading off, Scott City Chaffee, since they beat Kennett last week, is going to Dexter. Dexter just beat Scott City 35-3 at Scott City. This game is at Dexter. The Bearcats are going to have some rest. I'm going to take the Bearcats in this one.
Dexter.
Of course. Cape Central is going to host Webster Groves in a district semifinal. I'm going to take Cape Central in this one. Cape Central is the home team in the higher seed. It's always interesting when you play a St. Louis school, but like I said, I'm going to go with the host Tigers.
Yeah, I mean, they put a goose egg on 7th-seeded Melville in the first round of districts and scored 44 points themselves. Cape did have a dip in the middle of the season, but they have come out of that dip, and they've looked like the Cape Central program that we are accustomed to seeing here in Southeast Missouri. So, yeah, I'm going to take them at home over the visiting Webster Groves team.
Cape Central also has Keyshawn Boyd back, their star running back. That has given them a nice boost. That is going to be an interesting district championship if they get past Webster Groves and Farmington gets past Fox, which I am picking the Farmington Knights to do.
Yeah, I mean, Farmington's the top seed there, and Fox scored a lot of points against Poplar Bluff, but Farmington also scored a lot of points when they played against Poplar Bluff. Farmington being at home,
I might have to go visit my parents next weekend if it's a Cape Central Farmington game up in Farmington. That would definitely be worth an hour and a half drive to see that game. That's going to be a dandy if it turns out that way.
Indeed. Also, Jackson, after having a bye last week, is back on the field Friday night. They are hosting Oakville. Jackson, duh.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Oakville barely scored 19 points and just edged Lindbergh by 2 points. I think the real concern for the Jackson Indians is Seckman, their old bugaboo. Seckman has been their primary obstacle as far as getting any farther in the state tournament than they have the past couple of years. So that's another matchup that I'm going to be looking forward to.
That will be interesting, but I will, if that matchup does happen, I'm going to take Jackson in that one as well. Other games, New Matter County Central is at Caruthersville. Tigers are playing good right now. I'm going to take Caruthersville at home.
No question. I'm still a little bit puzzled by that loss that Caruthersville took a couple of weeks ago. But maybe that will turn out to have the same effect that I had predicted would happen to Dexter with their loss at Park Hills Central. So, yeah, I think Caruthersville is clearly the favorite in this game.
In the other Class 2 District 1 game, Perryville-St. Vincent is making the trip to Festus to take on St. Pius the 10th. I'm going to take St. Pius the 10th in this one, but that could go either way.
Well, it's a matchup of second and third seed teams, so the fact that St. Vincent is traveling to Festus, we'll just go ahead and give the small edge to St. Pius. They also scored 64 points. Again, that was against East Prairie, who's had a really rough season this year. But I think they will probably keep up the offensive firepower and emerge out over St. Vincent.
Switching to Class 1, District 1, Hayti is making the trip up to Saxony Lutheran. I'm taking Saxony Lutheran in this one. Again, this is a 2-3 game. This could go either way. I think Hayti has maybe gotten healthier in the last few weeks, and if that is correct, this one could be a barn burner.
I'm going to pick Hayti for the upset. I'm going to take the Hayti team that can score at will and go ahead and keep my fingers crossed for the sake of my prediction that their offense will be able to stop anyone on the Crusaders' side of the ball.
It's going to be interesting. In the other Class 1 District 1 semifinal, Portageville is going to Charleston. Portageville won their first match earlier in the season. I'm going to take Portageville in the rematch.
I'm going to take Charleston at home. The Charleston team that I saw a couple of weeks ago at East Prairie was a machine. So, yeah, I'm going to take the Blue Jays.
A bit of trivia. Charleston's quarterback is Chase Kirby. Chase Kirby's dad, Shane Kirby, was the quarterback for the Popperbluff Mules 35 years ago when we started 11-0, setting the school record for most wins in the season and made it all the way to state quarterfinals. That team is now in the Popperbluff Sports Hall of Fame. So I wanted to give a little shout-out to the Popperbluff Mules and the class of 1991, which I was a part of.
Yeah, that not only makes me feel old, I have to remember that in 1991 I was in graduate school at University of Missouri. So some people, 35 years ago, I was just a kid. It's like, no, I was not.
I was four, and Rugrats and Doug both just debuted on my birthday.
Nobody asked you, Kyle.
We're getting old, Shunny. We're getting old, Shunny.
Get off my lawn, you darn kids.
One other prediction. North County's at Perryville in Class 4, District 1. I'm going to take Perryville at home.
Oh, Class 4. I'm clicking on the wrong tabs here.
That's easy to do
with
this.
Perryville's the only Southeast Missouri team that we have left in that Class 4 bracket. The bracket looks like top-seeded Festus going up against Hillsboro, who eliminated Sykeston, and then we've got Perryville going up against North County, and that's North St. Francis County, so that's like Bonterre and Deloge and all of those communities up in the northern part of the Lead Belt here in eastern Missouri.
Indeed, and we're going to switch gears to talk a little bit of Raiders and Lady Raiders basketball. Starting off, the Lady Raiders are 2-0 on the season. got two big wins opening weekend, you know, dominated an Olney Central team on Saturday, then turned around and dominated Wabash Valley on Sunday afternoon. That one really stands out because Wabash Valley has been a national power the last few years, but I was told that Wabash Valley has had a coaching change and that program may be dealing with some turmoil. So that may explain some of the reason the Lady Raiders ended up winning that game 102-53. Either way, though, that is a huge win. And the Lady Raiders and head coach Alex Wiggs, both, they look like they are the Lady Raiders they've always been the last few years.
Well, there are three very specific goals for the Lady Raiders this season. Number one is to win the region, which unfortunately did not happen last season, even though it should have. But sometimes the ball just doesn't bounce your way. It looks like they have come out of the gates just absolutely screaming on fire. I mean, you know, and they've scored 206 points total in their first two games, while only giving up 46 and 53. Now it's the early part of the season, and they're sure to play tougher opponents, but winning the region is job number one. Securing as high of a seed as possible at the national championships is job number two. And, of course, job number three is getting past, what is it, Northwest Florida?
Northwest Florida State.
Northwest Florida State, which has eliminated the Lady Raiders past
three times in the last 5 years.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean they are Tom Brady to our Peyton Manning. They're just the obstacle,
yes,
the obstacle that we have yet to overcome. So it would be nice if we could get, you know, like on the opposite side of the bracket of that team, so that our only chance of seeing them is in the championship game. But I mean that's got to be on Alex's mind. It's like, how do we get past Northwest Florida State?
It's going to be interesting, and making that also more interesting is Northwest Florida State's president is former Three Rivers president Devin Stevenson.
Yeah, you know, that's when you have those past connections, you know, it's, you know, when someone used to be part of your program, now they're part of a new program, that always sets up a natural rivalry. You know, it would be like if Seattle played Las Vegas, and if Las Vegas actually had a professional football team instead of the mess that is coached by the animated corpse of Pete Carroll. But that's for our NFL segment that is yet to come later on in the show.
Indeed. And, you know, switching gears to the men's basketball team, the Raiders got their first win of the season last night. They played Arkansas State in Newport, came away with a 68-53 win, started a little slow, but outscored the visiting Aviators 32-13 to end the game, you know, to get their first win of the season. The Raiders started 0-2 for the first time in a long time. I can't remember the last time that's happened, but they did it against a very tough schedule. They lost 93-90 in overtime on opening night to Gulf Coast State, the number 14 team in the country, then lost 95-91 in overtime the next night to John A. Logan, the number 20 team in the country. Those were two very big barn burner games. The Gulf Coast game especially pops out because it was the homecoming for former TRC Raider and Advance High School grad Lane Ballou. Lane Ballou and his Big Blue Wrecking Crew came in here, looked really good. They not only they got a 22-point first half lead on the Raiders. The Raiders came back, took a small lead late in the game. Gulf Coast State forced overtime and then pulled it out in overtime. Hit a go-ahead three with about 30 seconds left. And then the next day, the Big Blue Wrecking Crew, as I like to call Gulf Coast State, not only because their colors are navy and gold, but because of Lane Ballou being their head coach, they are the Big Blue Wrecking Crew. They were down 10 points with 6 minutes left in Mineral Area, came back and beat the Cardinals 76-72. Later that night, the Raiders played John A. Logan, got down 14 points in the first half, came back, cut it to three by halftime, took a narrow lead late in the second half. Logan came back, forced overtime, and pulled it out in overtime. You know, two tough losses, but if you're going to lose, it's best to lose in overtime to two very great teams instead of getting boat raced by some average team.
Well, you know, and the margin of victory for their opponents was just three points and 4 points. So, you know, we just have to let the season play out. You know, the Raiders, our men's team, have some different goals than the women's team does. You know, I think the first goal is to secure a winning record. The next goal would be to win the region and get that free ticket punched to Hutch, and then see if you can do some damage at the national tournament. That's how I see it as the three goals for the men's team. But, you know, judging by their early performance, I think one of the things that Coach Kirby is going to have to work on his crew with is faster starts in the game.
Yes.
You know, getting down by double digits early on in the game means that you're going to spend most of the time just trying to bring it up to an even score, and that takes a lot of energy. So we'll have to see if that is something that the Raiders can address here as we go along. Of course, it's very early in the season, so you know you can't tell too much from a 1-2 record. We'll just have to see what they look like at the midpoint of the season when we come back after Christmas break.
Indeed, and the Raiders and Lady Raiders both have some pretty good tests coming up this weekend. The Lady Raiders are hosting Trinity Valley and Itawamba for a weekend tournament here at the Libel Family Sports Complex. They play at 6 o'clock on Friday night and then at 3 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. Those are going to be two very good games. Trinity Valley and Itawamba, you know, both teams that either, you know, Trinity Valley Friday night, Itawamba Saturday afternoon, both these teams are either nationally ranked and or played at the national tournament in Casper, Wyoming last year. So two very good tests for the Lady Raiders. It's going to be some great basketball to watch. I'm excited to see how they're going to do this weekend.
Yeah, and come out and support our teams. If you're in the Poplar Bluff area or if you live in Southeast Missouri and you are either a Three Rivers alum or just a Three Rivers supporter, come on out to the Libel Center and support the team. You know, it's not a home field advantage unless we can get that building loud and rocking. So come on out and see us.
Indeed, and the men also have a challenge this weekend. They are headed to Southeastern Community College at West Burlington, Iowa, to play in the, I believe it used to be called the Midwest JUCO Challenge. I think they have changed the name of it. But they are playing Sauk Valley out of Dixon, Illinois at 11 o'clock Friday morning. And then the big game for them is on Saturday morning at 10 o'clock when they get a rematch with Triton, the team that the Raiders beat to win the Midwest District Championship and get to Hutch last season. And this could be a preview of who the Raiders are going to have to again beat if they want to get back to Hutch in March of next year.
Yeah, and what a game that was. You know, as soon as I saw Triton College on the schedule, it's like, oh yeah, I remember that. You know, that was a team that came to Poplar Bluff way overconfident. They did not expect to be opposed in their trip to the Nationals, and even though they still did make it on the basis of their regular season schedule, they certainly did not expect to come into to Poplar Bluff and lose to the Raiders. So still great memories for the team and the program and our coach, and hopefully those good memories will translate into success this season as well.
Indeed, and I had something. Oh, what I was going to say, speaking of Triton, making that Saturday matchup even more interesting is former Raider Ethan Johnson is now playing for Triton. So that's going to add a little extra spice to that matchup.
Huh, interesting.
Before we go to break, we want to talk a little bit about the World Series that ended since our last show. And what a World Series it was after that 18-inning marathon that they had earlier in the series. We went to a seventh game, and on Saturday, this past Saturday night, the LA Dodgers prevailed in 11 innings in Toronto. You know, heck of a World Series. I would have loved to have seen the Blue Jays pulled it out, But that's really about the only complaint you can have for what is what may go down as one of the greatest World Series ever.
Kyle,
I gotta say,
go ahead.
Yeah. Thank you. And no hyperbole. I've been watching baseball since I was 6 years old, and I genuinely believe that Game 7 was the greatest baseball game I've ever watched up to this point in my life. With the exception of a walk-off, this game had everything. Benches clear. We had insane defensive plays by both teams. We had a bang-bang play at home plate with the bases loaded that could have won the World Series, and the Jays were two outs away, and then Andy Páez, who came in as a defensive replacement, sticks his bat out, homers in the ninth, and then the Jays tie it back up in the 10th, and I thought that the runner was safe at home at first. I really did. Like, never in my life have I been clutching my heart for a game that didn't involve the Cardinals so much. I had to go get a beer to lower my heartbeat. Shout out to Guinness. You're the MVP of Saturday night, but no, the true MVP was Yamamoto of the Dodgers. Let me tell you, this man was an absolute demon in this series. Shades of 2001 Randy Johnson and 2014 Madison Bumgarner. Three wins in the series, allowing one run and four total appearances. And he came in to pitch 2 2/3 inning on no rest after starting Game 6 and throwing 96 pitches. That is inhuman. Yeah. Honestly, Toronto may not have won the series. And I had them favored to win. They won their division, won more games than the Dodgers. And it's not like they were a team that didn't spend money. They had the fifth highest payroll in baseball. But the real winner was baseball and baseball fans. That was Hollywood could not have ever.
Yeah, it's unfortunate for Toronto also because, I mean, they went into Game 6 at home with a 3-2 lead. And that's like the biggest advantage you can have in a series like this year. You only need one game out of two games at home to win and secure the series. But the Dodgers prove once again that their pitching lineup is just superior. And, one of the things that I don't think we're going to see happen, I think it's going to take maybe another season-ending work stoppage for something like this to happen. But I also don't think that either side in baseball really has any sort of strong desire for this is a salary cap. I mean, there's a reason why, there are teams like Jacksonville and Carolina who are, competitive in the NFL. These are teams that are currently sitting in playoff spots despite the fact that they're small market teams who haven't had good recent history in terms of records. But the salary cap demands parity in the NFL, and with that salary cap there also comes a salary floor. There's a minimum that they have to spend on their rosters, and so you just don't, I mean, with the exception of like the Jets and the Browns, you just don't have franchises that are eliminated after the first month of competition the way you see in Major League Baseball. Teams like Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh is unlikely to ever compete for even a division title, much less a World Series title, for the remainder of our lifetimes, unless the financial situation in baseball changes to bring in more equity and more parity. We're just going to see the same big market, big spending teams like the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Dodgers. Now, yeah, you had some up-and-comers. You had Seattle this year who had a great season. Milwaukee had a great season, but then, as they always do, they just, they fold like a house of cards when it comes to the postseason. And, as far as once the Cardinals are eliminated from playoff contention sometime in mid-May, I can't believe I'm saying that, but it's true, and it's been true for the past 10 years, I just don't care about the sport, because I know at the end it's going to be, it's probably going to be Dodgers or Yankees or Dodgers or Red Sox, and I just don't care anymore. And that's a shame, but the fact of the matter is that the NFL has been willing to adapt to changes in culture, changes in marketing, in televising. I mean, Major League Baseball doesn't even have a national broadcasting contract. Think about that. Major League Baseball does not have a contract with a major national broadcaster of any kind. Meanwhile, the NFL...
I'll just say this.
Yeah.
I'll say this. Bud Selig would not have allowed that for all of his faults. He would have never allowed that.
Well, we'll bring Tucker back on the show, and he can give us an hour-long dissertation about why Rob Manfred is the worst owner in professional sports. And that's coming from a guy who's an NHL fan.
Yeah, we don't like Gary Bettman much, but Rob Manfred does make a case. Now, my counterpoint, I made a post on Facebook yesterday illustrating baseball truly at times can be that sport of parody, because I listed the payroll rankings of all playoff participants this year, and because I got sick and tired of hearing people online saying, this was David versus Goliath. The Blue Jays have the fifth highest payroll at $193 million. I don't want to hear it. The Cleveland Guardians were 27th in payroll at $49 million, and they won the AL Central. I saw the Florida Marlins in 2003 win the World Series with a payroll of $13
million. Right, but those are also outliers. I mean, yes, the Marlins have won a couple of World Series, but for most of their existence, they've been irrelevant. Same thing with the Arizona Diamondbacks. Arizona, especially when they had Randy Johnson, won a couple of World Series. You haven't heard diddly squat from them. And then, you know.
Well, they made the World Series last year.
No.
No, 2 years ago.
No, it wasn't last year because this is a repeat
for
the Dodgers.
2023.
Yeah, 2 years ago.
Yeah, you're right. My mistake.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like I said, there needs to be some changes in baseball. I mean, but I don't know if it's going to happen. It may take a sport wrecking work stoppage to make it happen, like Mark said. But we can talk more about that on another show, because that would be a great topic, you know. That is something that we could really do a deep dive on. But on that note, we are going to go to a break, and when we come back, we are going to talk about the National Football League here on the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle.
This is Three Rivers College women's basketball coach Alex Wiggs, and you are listening to the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle.
And we are back on the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle, and we are going to talk about the National Football League. And we're going to lead off by talking about the Minnesota Vikings, because I know Mark is excited about this one. Mark, take her away.
Yeah, this was not unthinkable, but it was unexpected, you know. One of the things that I talked about last week was the possibility that Detroit could overlook the Vikings, and the fact that the Vikings have looked terrible for the past few weeks. There was the unknown factor of J.J. McCarthy's return. You know, would he look like he did in that fourth quarter comeback against the Bears in week one, or would he look like someone who is just totally lost and out of place against Atlanta in week two? It turns out we got a little bit of both. His stat line was completely ordinary. His passer rating and PFF score were pedestrian, but the fact of the matter is that J.J. McCarthy showed Vikings fans a glimpse of our future with a young franchise quarterback. He was responsible for 3 touchdowns, 2 through the air, 1 with his legs, and most importantly, he had that clutch third down pass to Jalen Naylor to seal the game, led to 3 consecutive kneel downs to run down the clock. And, you know, the biggest thing that this game gave us as Vikings fans was hope that McCarthy will be the guy to lead our team for the years ahead. Now, is he going to be spectacular for the rest of the season? Of course not. You know, he could come out against Baltimore this coming Sunday and lay another egg, possibly for 4 quarters. I don't think that he will, because what McCarthy has shown us throughout his career is that you know, he learns as he goes, and I think he learned a lot from that bad performance in Atlanta. Now, there will be times in which he is going to look like a first-year quarterback. That's just something that happens. But I really want to compare the arc of his career to what we're seeing from Drake May in New England. Drake May was terrible last season, right up until about the last few games. Of course, completely different coaching staff then. But May played like a rookie until he didn't, and that was after about 10 to 12 games under his belt. And there is something, you talk to anyone who's familiar with the league, especially people who have played, and they talk about how fast the game is when you're a rookie. You just cannot compare the speed of the pro game to what you experience in college, and that is especially true for quarterbacks. And so rookie or first year in the case of McCarthy, because it's his second year in the league but his first year starting, he's going to have to get used to the speed of the game. And until he is fully accustomed to this, there are going to be moments in which he's inaccurate, he's indecisive, he's going to make bad turnovers. You know, the question is, will he be able to do two things? Number one, minimize the mistakes. Number two, maximize the opportunities. You know, when he has Justin Jefferson or Jordan Addison or Jalen Naylor wide open in the end zone, you know, hit him right in the hands with the ball, you know, and don't throw it so hard that it bounces off their face mask. You know, these are all of the subtleties that go into it. But the fact of the matter is the Vikings played a great game on both sides of the ball against Detroit. That was a Detroit team that I'm convinced thought that this was going to be an easy win, especially given the performance of the Vikings defense the past few games. Well, Vikings defense got healthy. They had a healthy Brian Cashman. They had a healthy Andrew Van Ginkle. And Van Ginkle really is the catalyst that drives the Vikings defense. You know, it's just offensive lines have a hard time accounting for him. And credit to free agent linebacker signing Eric Wilson, because Wilson blitzed on 18 snaps right up the middle, right up the A gap. And he had, I think it was two sacks and six, maybe eight pressures. Anyway, he was a force in the middle of that. They made Jared Goff uncomfortable and inaccurate. They held Jahmyr Gibbs to under 50 total yards on, I believe, seven or eight touches in the game. I mean, it was just an all-around. It was the Vikings team that we expected to see from the very beginning. And there is more hope coming down the road. Josh Oliver is recovering from a foot injury. C.J. Ham might be back in another week or two, playing at fullback and helping with pass protection for McCarthy. And while I'm not 100% certain that we even want to see this gentleman back on the field, Ryan Kelly has been cleared for individual practices. He's still on IR with the concussion. If he does come back, I really want to see him wearing that Guardian cap. I don't care if the other players make fun of his manhood for doing so. You don't want to end up with tapioca for brains if you choose to play again. You know, put that extra concussion protection on. But, you know, the idea that we might actually see the Vikings offensive line in its full construction the way that they intended from the very beginning. And, you know, at 4-4, I'm not going to say until I see the Vikings put together like a 3- or 4-game winning streak, I'm not going to say that they're playoff contenders. But had they lost at Detroit, any talk of the playoffs would have been ridiculous. They would have been sitting at 3-5 and 2 games behind everyone else in the NFC North. Well, now with the Packers' ridiculous, inexplicable loss to the Carolina Panthers. All credit to the Panthers, but I mean the Packers just gave that game away. It's like, what is wrong with Jordan Love's brain half the time? You know, it's like sometimes he looks like an MVP, and sometimes he looks like he's playing his first game in the NFL. Did you guys see that pass across his body, across the field? It went into the end zone and hit a Carolina defender right in the hands. I think he was so surprised to even see the ball was the reason. He's like, well, the ball's not going to get over here, and he threw it right at him. I mean, it was just the kind of ridiculous thing. So thank you, Detroit and Green Bay, for letting the Vikings back into at least contention in the division. I'm not going to be waving the flag for, you know, a deep playoff run this season, but we're still in it. You know, it's like that scene in that one movie starring Jim Carrey where he says, "So you're telling me there's a chance?" You know, it's our odds are a little bit better than one in a million, fortunately. But we were ready. We as Vikings fans, we were ready to bury the season before Sunday. People were talking about the game like, "Yeah, we're going to lose," but I mean, if JJ looks okay. If he looks like he's handling the speed of the game, you know, and he doesn't just look lost out there, then we'll count that as a win. And you know, we won the game by 3 points. We could have very easily won it by 10 or 14 points if a couple of unfortunate penalties hadn't gone against us in special teams. So, you know, the biggest bunch of hope is McCarthy could play a lot better than what he played. He said so himself. He goes, "I can play a lot better than that." You look at his stat line. You know, what if you've got a McCarthy who's throwing for 300 yards and 4 touchdowns and 2 running touchdowns? You know, then you've got something of a juggernaut on offense. And if the Vikings can get their offense going with all of their weapons and the potential of their defense, they can be a scary team to play here in the second half of the season. I think I've exhausted everything that I have, so I'm going to let you guys take over from this point.
Kyle, your Rams got a really nice win against the hapless New Orleans Saints, so I'm going to let you talk about that one before I talk about my team.
Unfortunately, for a chatterbox like myself, I don't have a lot to say. We beat a team and I've seen high school teams around here in the 4 states, shout out to Web City, that could whoop the Saints. I looked at the box score of this game, and I'm thinking, New Orleans never had the ball. Like, this was the most balanced offensive attack I've seen us have this year. We had 171 on the ground, 251 through the air. That was 281 through the air for 452 yards. John Matthew Stafford should be your dang NFL MVP at the halfway point right now. If you haven't paid attention, go look at his numbers right now.
Well,
this man has 21 touchdown passes to 2 picks.
Yeah, he's my MVP because he is my fantasy league quarterback. He was good for 26.84 points and led me to my victory last week over Scott Borkren in the Legends of the Gridiron League. So I improved to 4-5. I'm just trying to finish the season at 500. But here's the amazing thing for everyone else in our fantasy league. I picked Stafford up off waivers after Lamar Jackson went on injured reserve. And Stafford actually outscored Jackson in fantasy by a little under a point and a half. So thank you, Matt Stafford.
So
I think I'm going to keep you in my lineup for another week at least.
As you should. Name another team in the NFL right now that has 2 number one receivers. Bona fide number one receivers.
Minnesota Vikings.
I'll put mine up against yours any day.
You're gonna put your guys up against Jordan and Addison. Are you sure you're not dreaming?
No. What are we talking about here? I'll put Puka and Devontae up against Jettis and Jordan. I digress. This segment is about my rant.
Okay, go ahead.
Sir,
I'll give
you had
it
your
to
moment
you.
To speak. another workmanlike performance. Defense was very solid. New Orleans just never had a chance to do anything. They had the ball for 16 minutes in this game, committed 5 penalties, started a 29-year-old rookie quarterback. I kid. Tyler Shuck is, I think he's 24. But he's an older rookie. He's his first start. New Orleans is fighting an uphill battle. We handled our business, and we now have to get it back in blood against the 49ers. I'm still struggling with that loss to Mac Daddy Jones earlier this year when we thought, oh, it's just Mac Jones. No, Kyle Shanahan. This is proof. You can plug anyone. Sandman, you could go and put up 250 and 2 touchdowns in that offense. This is no joke.
Yeah, and my right arm doesn't even work. I'd have to play left-handed.
Mm-hmm. You have as much arm strength as 2025 Kirk Cousins. But unfortunately another injury to the 49ers, which is just almost like a broken record this year, or as just like in years past. First round rookie edge Mikael Williams tore his ACL. He's likely out for the season. The irony in all of this, with all of the injuries the 49ers have had this year, Christian McCaffrey's been healthy, and he's also my fantasy MVP. He's out there looking like CMC. This is a big-time game for both teams, because the 49ers sit at 5-3, or they're at 6-3. They haven't had a bye yet, and we are tied with Seattle at 6-2. Also, nobody talks about how good the NFC West is as a division this year so far. Not a lot of love for the Seahawks. 49ers talk usually revolves around the quarterback situation and all the injuries and CMC being healthy. And nobody talks about us. Not that I'm begging for attention, but put some respect on the NFC West for the 1-3 teams having a combined record of 18-7. It's incredibly impressive. We've got a huge game coming up, but I feel very secure. We are an early on championship contender. And if people want to start putting some respect on this year's team with a very young defense that is second in points allowed, I might add. Well, and we have one of the league's leaders in sacks and Byron Young.
Yeah, I mean, to me, you're the number one seed in the NFC. I mean, I would put you – the Eagles have been wildly inconsistent, while the Rams have been highly consistent this season. So, yeah, I think right now you're the clear favorites to come out of the NFC. I don't think there's any disputing that.
Problem is, and if you're a media head and you talk about the NFL a lot, you're not talking about the Rams because there's other headline grabbers. We're not a headline grabbing team. We just go and handle our business, and we do what we got to do to win ball games. And that's honestly the way I like it this year.
It's going to be interesting to see what you guys do. I mean, you guys looked really good this past weekend, unlike my Tennessee Titans. The good news is we had our moments. We gave the Los Angeles Chargers a lot better game than a lot of us expected, only lost by one touchdown. We ran a pick six back on Justin Herbert, sacked him six times, and also had a kick return for a touchdown. It's either a kick return or a punt return. That's the good news. The bad news is the defense still gave up 27 points. And the offense, aside from those two touchdowns, did not find the end zone in a 27-20 loss. So, yeah, we had some moments, but we're still a very, very bad team.
Yeah, I mean, there's no disputing that. I mean, we're just going to have to, you know, wait and see on so many things. I mean, you weren't gonna be competing for a playoff spot with a rookie quarterback in the first place. And now that you've got a rookie quarterback playing under an interim coach who's the literal definition of a lame duck, with a roster that frankly is worse than the Jets roster. I mean, it really is, especially on defense. There are so many holes to fill. And so, you know, you want that number one pick. You want that number one pick, and then you want to trade it for a bag of picks because you've got so many holes on both sides of the ball to fill.
And there's a good chance we're going to get that number one pick. That's going to lead us into our predictions for the week. I'm going to do most of my lightning round. I am going to lead off and make a very bold prediction. The Tennessee Titans, we will not get beat this week. We ain't going to lose, folks.
You're not going to win either. You're not playing. It's a bye.
Exactly. That's why we're not going to lose, because we're not going to play.
The Titans versus vacant.
Well, and you know what? I just realized.
Vacant.
The way this season has gone, that's probably not a bad choice. I'm going to go lightning round. I am going to say the Broncos are going to beat the Las Vegas Raiders. The Colts are going to beat the Falcons in Berlin, Germany. The Bears are going to win at home against the Giants. The Bills are going to go to Miami and win. Vikings at home over the Ravens. I almost wanted to call them the Ratbirds, which we Titans fans used to call them that. The Cleveland Browns are going to go to the Meadowlands and beat the Jets. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers win at home over the Patriots in what could be the best game of the week. Carolina Panthers should win big at home against the New Orleans Saints. I'm taking the Jacksonville Jaguars to go to Houston and beat the Texans. I'm taking the Seattle Seahawks at home over the Arizona Cardinals. I'm going to take the Rams on the road against the 49ers. The Lions, I think, should go to Washington and have an easy time with the Commanders. I'm taking the Los Angeles, not San Diego, Chargers at home over the Pittsburgh Steelers. And last but not least, I'm going to pick the Philadelphia Eagles to go to Lambeau and beat the Packers.
Who's next? Am I next?
Yes.
Okay. I'm gonna follow. Yeah, Broncos over the Raiders. The Colts are going to be really motivated to come back. But then so are the Falcons. I mean, the Falcons are so up and down. Yeah, Colts are at home. I'm going to go with the Colts. I was 7-7 last week, so, I mean, who can tell? The Giants are at the Bears. The Giants just don't have enough players on offense, and the Bears offense seems to be clicking really well. Buffalo's going to beat Miami in Miami. For some reason, those teams always trade road wins, and Miami usually plays Buffalo early in the season, and they seem to win at Buffalo, and then Buffalo comes down to Miami and squashes the Fins. I have to be optimistic about the Vikings. I'm going to go ahead and pick them over the Ravens. I think it's pretty obvious that the Vikings defense is going to focus most of their attention on containing the run by both Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry. So I think the Vikings, and plus, you know, I mean, Baltimore's defense, yes, it's been improved, but it's been improved against bad teams. So I think Kevin O'Connell is going to reach into his bag of tricks and really exploit the holes in that Baltimore defense. I'm going to pick the Jets to beat the Browns just because the Jets are playing at home, and I really don't like Dylan Gabriel at quarterback for the Browns at all.
And the Browns are still the Browns.
Awful.
Yeah.
Shadir time, y'all.
Oh, gosh.
Well, you might as well. I mean, what have you got to lose?
It's been past time.
Who knows? Tampa Bay coming off the bye. They're going to win at home against the Patriots. The Patriots have been winning on luck, Drake May, and an easy schedule. They're not going to go to Tampa Bay and beat the Bucs at home. Baker's going to be ready for them, and I think Tampa Bay's going to win that game. The Panthers are going to continue their hot streak and beat the Aints. They are the Aints again. Everybody in New Orleans is like, get your grocery bags out. Paper, not plastic. Again, you know, people need to be told. Jags over the Texans. Seattle's going to blow Arizona out of the water. But, man, Arizona beating the Cowboys on the road on Monday Night Football, I'm impressed. I also think the Cowboys are exactly as bad as we thought they were at the beginning of the season.
The Cowboys are number one in total offense and dead last in total defense.
Yep. I'm picking the Rams because I want to manifest Stafford having a big day against the Niners defense. And they usually play well in Frisco. And I think the Rams, you know, despite similar records, I think the Rams are certainly healthier than the Niners, and I think they're also a better team. Detroit is going to take out last week's frustration on Marcus Mariota and the Washington Commanders. I have to tell you, leaving Jaden Daniels in that game after the outcome was already predetermined and getting him hurt like that, I think Dan Quinn could be on a hot seat. I don't think you know, necessarily going to get fired. But I mean, the Commanders are sitting at 3-6 after going to the NFC Championship last year. They're not going to make the playoffs with Mariota as their quarterback. So, you know, how much patience is that new ownership going to have with Dan Quinn? Mariota should have been in that game for that last drive, not Jaden Daniels. The Pittsburgh Steelers are an illusion. The Chargers are going to win that game at home. And, of course, I'm going to pick the Eagles over the Packers.
Kyle, you got any thoughts?
Yes, I do. And also, I have a trade to announce. As of this recording, this is trade deadline Tuesday. The Las Vegas Raiders have just traded Jacoby Myers to the Jacksonville Jaguars in exchange for 4th and 6th round picks in next year's draft. So that trade just came down. Trade deadline is 4 Eastern time. So just want to pass that one along. The Jaguars pick up some wide receiver help while Travis Hunter is on injured reserve, and they get some help for Trevor Lawrence and Brian Thomas Jr.
Hold on just a second. I'm sorry, Kyle. Let me interrupt. I like that trade a lot. It also brings up if Las Vegas decides that they're sellers, where is Max Crosby most likely to end up? Will he stay in Vegas, or will somebody belly up to the bar and put down the big bucks for one of the best pass rushers in the game?
I cannot imagine what the Raiders' asking price would be, but I also don't trust the Raiders to be smart enough to put Max on the market and say, hey, we need more picks, we need more bodies. This Geno Smith guy kind of stinks. Well, this defense kind of stinks.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely at least a second round, maybe a first round pick. I don't know, with his age, his number of years in the league, maybe he doesn't warrant a first round pick, but definitely I would say a second and a fifth, maybe.
That's plenty fair. That's a good haul.
Yeah, yeah. What if the Rams picked him up, Kyle? I've heard some rumors that the Rams might be interested in him.
We don't need edges. We've invested a lot in our first and second round picks last year are edges. And Braden Fisk led the team in sacks as a rookie, but Jared Verse, another edge, won Defensive Rookie of the Year, and Byron Young is top 5 in the league in sacks. I think our front 7 is just fine.
Okay.
But it wouldn't hurt. It wouldn't hurt. Max Crosby in blue would look really good.
Yep.
It does look better in silver, though. I will say that. However, getting back into matchups, obviously, and I'll do my lightning round. I got us going on the road and beating the Niners. That's going to be a close game. We get 3.5 on the road, but I think it's going to be a close game. We'll win. Atlanta is a team that annoys me because of how good their defense has been at times this year. They're top 3 in the league in sacks, and they sacked Drake May 6 times on Sunday and harassed him without blitzing. What's annoying about this team is their lack of special teams. But don't be shocked if they beat the Colts. Indy should be motivated. They're back home. But I would not be surprised if somehow Atlanta pulled that off. I will take Indianapolis.
The thing we have to remember about Atlanta is that Penix is essentially a first-year quarterback. Yes, he had a few games last season at the end of the season, so technically he did get some game experience. But he's also been hurt for a couple of games, which was the knock on him coming out of college, that, yeah, he's got mad talent, but he's also lost a lot of time to injuries. He's also one of the oldest quarterbacks drafted. So a ton of talent, but you just have to ask yourself the question, will he be able to stay healthy enough to get to that point that I was talking about with McCarthy, to that point where the game slows down and you really start to see what's happening in front of you? Because if he can do that, Atlanta's going to be a monster. I love Penix's talent. This question is just whether you can keep him on the field.
Yeah, that's the best ability is availability. And in a prior time, as you elder gentlemen would know, if certain games used to be locally blacked out. If this was 1995, the Browns and Jets would be blacked out locally. But since everybody gets to play on TV nowadays, and you know what? I'm going to take the Jets at home. I know the Bengals defense will make anybody look good. Look at what the Bears did Sunday. Look what the Jets did last week. But I sense that that Jets team is fired up. And they got really good contributions out of their running game, which Justin Fields, God knows he needs. They need a lot of help, but they're at home. Dylan Gabriel is horrendous.
Yes.
He is terrible. And also, how smart are the Cleveland Browns? You use two draft picks on quarterbacks, one left-handed, one right-handed, one's an RPO guy, the other's an air raid guy. And neither of those quarterbacks fit your scheme.
I think Kevin Stefanski is literally trying to get fired. He's just like, oh, my God, get me out of here. I'll go back to being an OC again. Just get me out of here.
He's done everything he can with the lack of groceries Cleveland's given him to cook with. God bless him. But I got the Jets in that one. Jacksonville and Houston, honestly, I'm taking Houston. Their defense is elite. And outside of Josh Hines Allen on their defense and Trayvon Walker, there's not much of a pass rush. And Trevor Lawrence is going to probably get ate up by that Texans secondary. Derek Stingley Jr. may have a field day. I got Houston at home.
Well,
Hold on.
Stroud is concussed. Are you going to go with the Texans even with their backup quarterback, whose name I cannot think of?
Davis Mills. He was a tank commander the year before they got Stroud. Davis Mills. He's in, I think, his third or fourth year out of Stanford.
I think you're making
that. And he was their tank commander. No, I am not, sir. Yes, I know. Stanford doesn't produce NFL talents anymore. Not true, but I digress.
Yeah.
I will clarify if C.J. Stroud is available. I still would take the Texans in an ugly, low-scoring game. If not, I'll take Jacksonville on the road, and they get a signature win against a great defense. Buffalo's going to 50-burger Miami.
Yep.
Just, moving on. And Mike McDaniel trying to get fired. This Tampa-New England game is great on paper, but as you illustrated earlier, New England has played a really weak schedule. That's worked to their advantage. And God bless and credit to them. They've handled their business against who they need to beat. But you're playing Baker at home. No, sir. I have Tampa. I'll take them to cover and win probably by about 9 in that game.
Sounds
about Bears nice. Giants, and you know what, the Bears are going to win this game, even if Brian Burns breaks Caleb Williams in half with that ferocious pass rush. Unfortunately, that's all the Giants really have to work with. They are beat up, and they just, as you said, they don't have enough available dudes.
Yeah.
No Cam Scataboo, no Malik Neighbors. Jackson Dart's running for his life trying to make plays.
You know, Dart is playing great. I think he's a revelation. But, I mean, he's got no one to throw to. He's got no one to hand the ball off to. I mean, it's like he can't throw the ball up in the air and then run downfield and catch it himself. I don't know, maybe he can. That might be an option. But, no, the Giants have just been destroyed by devastating injuries this season. If I was a Giants fan, I'd be like, okay, let's tank this year. I mean, obviously you don't want to bench Dart, but, if the Mara family has, any sense at all, they'll bring in Brian Daboll and say, you know what, doesn't matter how you finish. It's like, lose the rest of the season. We'll get the second pick in the draft, and we'll get another number one receiver to go on the other side of Malik Neighbors. Can you imagine something like that and have Dart throw to both of the sides? Be able to, recreate, that, something like the greatest show on turf. Remember when Kurt Warner had two or three excellent receivers to throw to? It's like there's all kinds of silver linings in the Giants season despite their record.
Absolutely. And there has to be an air of optimism with the Giants. It's just that everything's worked against them this year. But I got the Bears at home. I'm taking your Vikings at home because Baltimore, yes, you got Lamar back. But can Lamar play defensive back? No. Can he play edge? No. Good grief. The man can only do so much. You're back home.
He's coming off a hammy too, so you have to question whether he's really 100%.
Exactly, but you know, even with a with an injured hammy, he's still better than Tyler Huntley and Cooper Rush. y'all are gonna handle why I don't why Baltimore's a 4.5 point road favorite. I don't know. Make it make sense. Carolina and New Orleans. I will laugh if New Orleans wins this game because I think they very well could. However, Rico Dowdle is one of the best running backs in the NFL that nobody's talking about for the Carolina Panthers. Are they winning in ideal ways? No, but they're winning games and they're at home. I'll take Carolina, but I will laugh and not be shocked if the Saints LOL their way to a win. Seattle hosting the Cardinals. I got Seattle at home. That's a big home field advantage. Sam Darnold's playing magnificent football, thus proving it wasn't a fluke. Credit to him. Arizona, good win against the worst defense in football. Lions and Commanders, I feel so bad for the players on the Commanders. Dan Quinn needs to be tarred and feathered for what he did, leaving Jaden Daniels out there.
Yep.
And a game when you're down 4 touchdowns, what's the point? He's the hood ornament to your football team.
Mm-hmm.
And it literally is sophomore year RG3 all over again.
Yeah,
it's disgusting. It sucks. But Detroit is going to be mad. They're going to be ready to roll. They're going to win by double digits. Steelers and Chargers. The Steelers are fool's gold. They are the best of arguably the worst division in all of football. They are not a good football team. Chargers got them at home. Justin Herbert going to have a field day. Monday night, Eagles will go to Green Bay and win because you don't know what you're getting out of Jordan Love on a week-to-week basis. This dude is bipolar. I saw the play you're talking about. It's like his brain glitched.
Blue screen of death, absolutely.
yeah. All of a sudden, his brain said, error 404. Good night.
Play not but found.
Colder. It's starting to get colder. That style of game. All that weather favors Philadelphia. I Josh Jacobs is a great back. Saquon's better. I'll take them on the road. But I think that game's going to be low scoring and it won't be fun to watch. But that's my lightning round, fellas.
And that's our show for this week, guys. We've got some good stuff coming up in the next few weeks. Really excited about it. We'll know more about that when we get closer. But I'm Mike Bueller.
I'm Mark Sanders.
And I'm Kyle Roberts.
And you've been listening to The Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle.